For a lot of people, a trip to a national park involves loading up the car, then setting up a tent, grabbing drinks out of the cooler, hoping you've remembered to pack the batteries for your torch. But increasingly, a national park experience can look very different. Luxury lodges, glamping, catered dining, maybe at the end of the day, a relaxing Shiraz in an actual glass. It's nature with luxury conveniences. And it's part of a growing trend that's seen national parks around the country used for permanent, private, plush accommodation. This week, the news broke that New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service has called for expressions of interest from businesses to provide supported camping in 16 national parks and reserves across the state. Details are still pretty scant, but the government says it'll be a service that provides fully set up camping sites for locals and travellers from interstate and overseas. The parks include our most iconic, like Kosciuszko and the Blue Mountains. So, is this a valuable source of revenue? Does it make our national parks more accessible? Or is this just privatising public space? And here to chat about it with me is Jesse Burke, the president of Bushwalking New South Wales, and Sonia Underdahl, who is a professor of environmental sociology at Itagawa University in Japan. Jesse, I might start with you. How did you hear about this latest plan?
Hi, Tegan. So we heard about this after one of our members happened to have a keen eye and came across the proposal. It wasn't made public, so it was just by luck that we came across it.
So it wasn't very well advertised, is that sort of what you're saying there?
No, it wasn't advertised at all.
Do you have concerns about this proposal or this call for expressions of interest?
Yeah, we do have concerns about it, particularly because it wasn't publicised. So as bushwalkers and members of Bushwalking New South Wales, we are frequent users of these parks. Bushwalking clubs and individual walkers rely on fair and affordable access. So this proposal would, take that away from us.
So the New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service behind this. We reached out to them. A spokesperson said in part that by offering a service that provides fully set up camping gear, camping can be made more accessible, encourage more people to explore the outdoors and help them gain confidence, and that it'll be operating side by side with existing campsites that will remain open to the public, no exclusive use of any campsite by a private operator. Jesse, as a bushwalking club, you're sort of with a group of people who are quite confident. Do you think that there's an argument here that this actually does make the national parks more accessible?
So the proposal suggests that private operators will have able to book out these campsites 12 months in advance. So they'll be able to book it out and make it, you know, less available to bushwalkers. Services for first-time campers already exist, and we don't need to hand exclusive access to private companies to help people experience the outdoors.
Sonia, you've researched tourism inside public protected areas. What do you make of this accessibility argument?
So this is thank you for having me. Basically, this is a very, very current topic we've been covering throughout Australia with protests and legal actions taken, both at the Supreme Court level, federal court level, and we've been protesting in communities throughout Queensland, New South Wales, and also Tasmania. It's extremely controversial because it's basically allowing private developers to benefit from our public areas, locking us out. And there are claims that we're getting economic benefit. We're also getting jobs. And we're also doing this to protect or to conserve the environment. And my research shows very clearly that that is absolutely not the case on any of those levels.
Can you tell me more about the research you've done and what you found?
Sure. We've held multiple surveys throughout a lot of these communities, including Beoa National Park down in New South Wales. And we've been looking at what the public thinks and what they feel. I've also done a series of interviews and research with tourism operators that are working and functioning in the areas already prior to these contracts being delivered to one certain tour operator or one proponent. And my research shows that the systems that we're talking about here, where someone gets a contract, they can go in and they can set up their private equipment and allow access for their clients, actually only caters to 0.0.
Sonia, have we still got you there?
Population that utilises national parks.
Sorry, Sonia. I think your phone line just cut out a little bit before. But what I wanted to put to you was this part of the statement that I mentioned before from New South Wales National Parks and Wildlife Service. The spokesperson said that supported camping will be side by side existing campsites. All the campgrounds will remain open to the public. They're not exclusive use.
Yes.
Isn't it unfair to say the public will have less access to national parks?
That is in some cases. In the other cases, which are already established throughout Australia and are still continuing, we actually have some which now have private use and private guests only signs up. So it's not to say that that is the actual example throughout. In this case, yes. And in this case, they're saying that they're opening up next to public, which is also a case they've done at Hinchinbrook and Whitsunday Islands, etc. But tourism operators find that this is a monopolistic or unfair trade practice. They're unable to financially be supported. They're unable to get enough revenue in order to support their businesses. They're also unable to compete with a proponent that has access or unfair access to our World Heritage areas, our national parks, for their exclusive product, and generally at very, very low cost for rents. For example, Spices, they pay $10,000 plus GST a year rent for two massive resorts inside our World Heritage and National Park areas. So we're not really getting economic benefit out of it, and we're also reducing the ability for tourism operators to compete.
So in Australia, this is something that both Labor and Liberal state governments have pursued. It's not really a partisan thing. Sonia, what's behind the trend of privatising recreation and conservation lands?
So it seems that these developers are quite powerful. They're some of the biggest organisations in the world. They're actually lobbying through, and I've done some research and published on this in regards to trying to lobby the UN itself to allow access to develop their resorts and facilities in national parks globally. So we're not talking about small companies or small businesses. Spices is owned by Flight Centre, for example. We've got Australian Walking Company. We've got Tasmanian Walking Company. We've got Experience Co, Intrepid. These are all massive organisations, Salter Brothers, multi-billion dollars organisations. So there is obviously big business behind it and lobbying and trying to sell it to us as if it's a really nice idea to allow a monopolistic takeover of public facilities.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, speaking with Professor Sonia Underdahl, who's an environmental sociology researcher, and Jesse Burke, who's the president of Bushwalking New South Wales, about expressions of interest now being open for private operators to provide supported camping in New South Wales national parks. Nothing's happened yet, but it really does seem like the door is opening towards that. One text says, we need to talk about how we use national parks and balance enjoying it with the impact of people. More tourists is spoken about as a good thing, and we treat nature as a commodity to be exploited. Ken in Fingal Head says, many of the national parks in Africa include glamping, and it provides a much needed source of revenue to manage the parks and is a big plus for preserving the environment and wildlife. Carnarvon Gorge in Queensland, one person says, has permanent glamping as well as casual camping and a restaurant. It does allow all ages to join a beautiful park. I can hear you thinking through as I read those texts out, Sonia. What are your comments to those perspectives?
Thank you. Carnarvon Gorge is actually a historical lease that's transferred over. So they managed to retain the business section of that. So it's a little bit of an anomaly. In regards to private operators, just to be clear, this is private operators have always been able to access national parks. But historically, we do tourism which is adjacent to the national parks. So we will stay in accommodation in regional Airbnbs, use the cafes, the restaurants, use the facilities, shops of those regional communities, and they really do benefit from it. They've had COVID, drought, bushfires. They have had massive amounts of problems in regards to finding employment and getting that economic benefit. And so putting people in an adjacent location and then transferring them through to the national park where they can do the walk and at the end of the day return to their facilities and accommodation really benefits the local community and provides regional jobs. My research shows that when you're located inside the park, you're picked up from a hotel or the airport, you then take them out on track. They stay on track inside facilities with the tour guides doing the driving, the cooking, the cleaning, all of that, and then they're returned back to an airport. So the regional area is really not benefiting from facilities being located within parks. The other thing you have to look at is our ability to compete as tourism operators against somebody who is supported by the state and federal government and local councils. For example, if we're having a look at the signature experiences of Australia, the marketing alone by the federal government under Tourism Australia, it's a $202.3 million tourism industry. And they partner with airlines, STOs, distribution partners. They provided in 1 year 12,877 PR event contents, 630 media and broadcast clips. They're focusing and targeting 17.3 million visitors. So when you're becoming an operator within the national parks, you also streamline into the marketing, the advertising, and you're getting the government support through their booking systems, advertising on national park websites, events, webinars, workshops. They're targeting 78,000 frontline travel sellers internationally. This is something that a regular tourism operator is unable to compete with. And my research shows that the local tour operators are now heading overseas where they can find a free trade market. So, they're listing it now as Australia being a monopoly and they're unable to financially compete.
So, Jesse, after you learnt about this supported camping plan, you contacted all of the local Bushwalking New South Wales clubs. What kind of action have they taken?
Yeah, so there's been strong opposition across our clubs. We represent 70 clubs across New South Wales and ACT, which is made up of about 12,000 members. So within 48 hours of being notified of the proposal, clubs had sent letters to the minister and their local member for parliament. So bushwalkers and the general public are stakeholders for national parks. It's a public asset. So we believe that regardless of your stance, national parks should have consulted with the public, including Bushwalking New South Wales. The bushwalking movement was instrumental in the establishment of many of our well-known parks, including Blue Mountains National Park. And we have an ongoing and collaborative relationship with national parks. The expression of interest actually closed this week, but the decision or the outcome of that won't be reached until early February. So our suggested solution is that the New South Wales government withdraw or substantially revise the proposal. Any changes to campground management or access should occur only after genuine public consultation and with a clear demonstration of public benefit. We ask that the New South Wales government reaffirm its commitment to maintaining national parks as spaces for recreation, connection to nature and community wellbeing rather than as commercial venues.
So, Sonia, some of this is baked into what Jesse's just said, but if there's concerns about this, but these sorts of offerings are popular. Lots of people do them Yes. and enjoy them. So if they do end up being part of the national parks offering, how do we do them well?
Thank you. That's a great question. Yes, the glamping model is extremely popular. But how do we do it? Well, we basically have to ensure a free and fair trade opportunity for all operators to access those sites. And you have to remember with operators, they require a certain amount of visitors or guests in order to make a profit and to be financially sustainable. So, for instance, if you have 40 spaces, 40, and we require 15 spaces for a company to make a profit, so we need 15 guests that are allowed on board, it means only two companies can access those spaces if there are 40 available for profit. But what's happening is a lot of the companies are actually booking out in advance. They're taking the entire bunch, and that locks out all other operators. So there really needs to be a fair bidding system if that's going to be the case. And being aware that there are minimum numbers that have to be met to make a profit, usually around 15 from my research. And so that basically either allows one operator or maybe two, but there has to be a system which ensures that everyone has an opportunity to be financially viable. The other issue is, of course, that with tourism operators, they are taking spaces that could be allocated to independent walkers who are already booked out. Operators getting 1 year in advance for making their bookings, whereas independents get 6 months. So there are some issues there in regards to community, and my surveys and research showing that community is asking for more spaces, more access to parks for independent camping, and less spaces for tourism or no space, because they are obviously taking up for massive profits, personal private profits, spaces that could be for regular families and independent campers.
On the text line, one person says, national parks are first to protect the natural elements of the area, then to facilitate people to view or experience those things into the long future. The best way to do this is to place all developments on the edge of or near the park, then develop access to those areas that can handle it. Well, I will just reiterate a little bit more of the New South Wales Parks statement that they provided to us. They said having a variety of businesses operating within national parks is not new. It's been occurring since 2009. Private businesses already offer guided tours and equipment hire, which sometimes includes supported camping. There are currently 383 licensed operators. They book less than 1% of overnight stays, and most of them offer school children participating in outdoor education programs. The full statement from the Park Service will be available online with this segment, but thank you very much to Jesse and Sonia Jesse Burke, the president of Bushwalking New South Wales, and Sonia Underdahl, professor of environmental sociology at Itagawa University in Japan.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.